Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Do you notice anything different about my hair?
It's shorter?
Nope.
It's parted on the other side?
Nope.
You got highlights?
Nope.
I'm out of guesses.
Well, maybe my hair is a little bit lighter.
Yeah.
That's part of it, possibly.
Yeah.
I've been driving my Jeep around without the top off.
Oh, so it's a little must.
A little must.
Your hair is must from the wind.
I have Jeep hair right now.
Jeep hair?
And maybe sun-kissed highlights.
Sun-kissed highlights.
Yeah. So,
well, all right.
Past couple days I've been driving my Jeep. I haven't driven it as a daily driver like that in quite some time.
Wow. Barefoot boy with cheek of tan. Good tidings on you, little man.
I don't know what that's from.
I don't know either. My mom used to say that, but I don't really know what it means.
I thought it was maybe from like Peter Pan or something.
No, I don't think so. I think some kind of nursery rhyme, but I don't really know.
I'm not familiar with that one.
You know, I was thinking after we did last week's episode, and I was thinking about that. You know, we did the story about the impotence court and how that worked and the performance and everything.
Or how it didn't work.
Or how it didn't work, yeah. But I, you know, reading it and talking about it in an entertaining type fashion was one thing. I started thinking about the reality of that in real life, actually it happening.
Yeah.
And the thing that we really didn't talk about that kind of made me think later is you are having, when you have to go to Congress,
yeah,
you are actually having to do this with an unwilling subject.
Yeah.
Because she is banking on you failing.
Yeah.
So she's going to do everything she can to make it so that it won't happen. I mean, the cards are really stacked against you.
They are.
And I didn't think about that, you know, that you've got an unwilling subject. I'm just thinking, wait, you just got to go in and complete the act. Wait a minute. She's going to be doing everything she can to keep you from it because she's the one that brought you there.
Yeah. She's going to be saying stuff like, you know, your mother loves you.
Yeah.
I mean, what? No.
So, I mean, it's almost like a court-appointed rape in a way. You have to commit the act of rape to be able to get to prove that you're a man.
It's a bizarre situation.
I know. It's just totally screwed up when you think about the reality of it. I mean, it was, like I say, I was just kind of talking about it and joking, but not really thinking about it in real terms.
Yeah, like this is some sort of fiction or something. Yeah,
can you believe this? You know, but when you think about it in real terms, it just blows my mind. But I just had to bring that when you think about it, because we didn't really hit on that. I read that one part, you know, where they would be cursing at you and saying things and everything. But when you think about that, you're trying to have sex with an unwilling victim.
Yeah.
Which in layman's terms is a rape.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That was just blew my mind.
That's interesting. That popped up in your mind again.
Well, it's just that whole idea of that court, you know, it's just unbelievable. I mean, I've heard of a kangaroo court, but this is a different kind of jumping around.
It's kind of strange. It gave rise to some more thinking about it.
Yep, they just pop up.
I think I'm done with those.
I hope so.
I exhausted them last week, and you know, we revisited this week a little bit. I got two more in. That's good.
I guess that was your duty.
It was. Well, this episode is not about impotence.
It's about financial impotence.
I guess you could say that. But we were talking about it, and we have never actually done an episode, I don't think, on bankruptcy.
No, I was trying to figure out, because I'd researched the same type things, and I was thinking, did we do this? But it was tax evasion is what we had done it on, or violating tax laws or whatever. So that's kind of puts us in the same realm, more or less.
Well, growing up and before law school, I had no idea what bankruptcy really was. To me, it was just part of the Monopoly game, and that was basically what happened when you lost, like you were kaput. Yeah. It was over. You're done for. It's like it was the end of everything.
Yeah, and there was a card in there that one of the community chests or chance cards or something that had something to do with bankruptcy, wasn't it? And pay 200 or something like that.
Maybe, but when you actually don't have money to pay somebody,
then you're bankrupt.
You're bankrupt too.
Yeah.
Which essentially means, I guess, you know, you're out of funds and the game's over for you. But in modern day terms, really, bankruptcy is not the end of the line for you.
You don't go to debtor's prison after that.
No, there is no debtor's prison. Basically, bankruptcy in its modern form is a chance for you to start over, kind of get a fresh start to erase debt. So that is, in reality, bankruptcy is quite different from the end of the Monopoly game.
Yeah.
If it was honestly the end of the Monopoly game, then, or if bankruptcy was honest in a Monopoly game, then, you know, you'd have to go in front of a bankruptcy judge and they would look at what options you have, what property you have, and maybe sell some of it off and try to discharge some of your debts and reorganize it and work it out so you can keep on playing.
And keep your Trump hotels.
That's right. But that would actually not be fun if that was the end of the Monopoly game, because it would make that game go on even farther.
Well, that's true, although you couldn't play for more than 7 years. I mean,
that's
because you can't apply for bankruptcy within 7 years. So you can only do it once. Then when you win again, you're just done. You go to debtor's prison.
Going a little bit off topic, but talking about Monopoly, I used to love that game. And I still, it holds a warm place in my heart as a fun game I played as a child. And who can not resist McDonald's when it's Monopoly time? Because it's, you know, all these chances to win things.
Right, although it's rigged.
But I will say, I think objectively, Monopoly is not a good game.
Was it teach you greed or something?
No, I just think the gameplay mechanics of it, it's not a really a good game if you think about it. Because I've started playing some board games, you know, in the past 5 to 10 years. Like, there's kind of been a renaissance of board games, I think.
Yeah.
And the games that you play these days with the rule sets and the way they work, they're much more intriguing. And there's just more going on than Monopoly. Monopoly is just basically, you try to land on spaces, it's blind luck, and then you build hotels. I mean, there's no real strategy involved in it.
Well, whether you buy a property or not when you land on it and stuff like that. Whether you build houses and hotels or not.
I don't know.
Or do you conserve your money? But, you know, that's like a lot of things. I mean, back when I was a kid, all we had was sticks and rocks to play with. So, you know, you came up in the Monopoly area and now they got video games. So,
that's
you
true.
Know, it's hard to compare them all.
Well, but I'm just saying.
Now you got Cards Against Humanity.
Well, yeah, like with board games. Like, for example, Ticket to Ride, which we affectionately call at my house the train game. It's kind of a very strategic type base game, and I believe on the cover of the it says it was the 2004 German board game of the year. So it's got that going for it too. But but it's much more kind of strategic based. I think
it's 1944.
I just think board games these days are much better. Monopoly is just not that great of a game. If you're going to play a board game, don't pull out Monopoly.
Well, we used to have big tournaments of it, like when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. We'd play on somebody's porch and just, you know, when it was time for dinner, you went home and just left the game the way it was and came back the next day and picked up where you left off, you know.
Yeah.
But I really can't stand to play it now. Now I find it boring.
Yeah. See what I mean? Like, I mean, you've played some board games with Sid and Justin, haven't you?
When they
brought them over?
Yeah.
And they usually have
more. We used to have game nights all the time. We don't do it much anymore.
They have newer style board games, like you know, King of Tokyo, or I think different ones where there's more stuff going on.
Yeah, there's one where there's like some disease taking over the world.
Oh, pandemic.
Pandemic, yeah.
Yeah, I played that with them before too.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just think that board games anymore are better. And that's me stepping off my board game box.
That's Lawyer Mike Meadows telling you about board games. Now, back to the topic.
So bankruptcy now is a chance for people to start over. But originally, back when it first came about, it was more of a way for creditors to make sure they actually receive payment. It was less to do with the debtor and more about the creditor. So bankruptcy is actually a federal law. It's not something that goes state by state, and it allows individuals and businesses to eliminate or reorganize their burdensome debt. And it is guaranteed in the U.S. Constitution. It actually comes from the Constitution. And it actually existed in England before that. So whenever the Constitution came about, the framers and the founding fathers wanted to go ahead and put that in there. So Article 1, Section 8 gives Congress the power to quote, establish uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcies throughout the United States. So, and this came about whenever the Constitution was first enacted, but basically it took more than 10 years before Congress actually ratified any issue of bankruptcy kind of law. Mm-hmm. So the Constitution gave Congress the power to do it, and then they basically took 10 years to get around to passing anything that had to do with bankruptcy.
So that makes the bankruptcy laws the same in every state?
It does, yeah. And before that, there was some state-by-state framework for bankruptcies, and they were actually very pro-creditor as well, and actually had provided for imprisonment for, like, debtor's prisons and things like that. And then basically, eventually in 1833, federal law abolished any kind of debtor's prison for that. So for that little bit of period there, there were some kind of some bad things to be a debtor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I played Ebenezer Scrooge, and he used to proclaim good things about debtor's prison.
That's right. Well, back in the Scrooge days, I think that was allowed. So there were some different bankruptcy laws which have been passed, and the original one, like I said, was 10 years after the Constitution was enacted, and at that time, in the original version of it, only merchants, bankers, and brokers could petition a creditor, and it was basically involuntary proceedings. So the debtor actually didn't file it. The creditor was the one that filed it.
And that was so that he could force your assets to be divided up and him to get some of it?
Exactly. So it was not what we have today. And what that law was basically, there was somebody who, the estate was basically placed under somebody chosen by the creditors to make sure that all the debts were paid. And it was only kind of a stopgap measure. It was temporary. And there was a 5-year sunset clause in it. And so basically they repealed the law in 1803. So, but the bankruptcy code we have now was passed in 1978, and it's codified as Title 11 of the U.S. Code, and it's been amended several times since then. I don't know when the most recent amendment was. But
one was not too long ago.
Yeah, it was.
But now there's different types of bankruptcies as well. I'm sure that you're going to cover, right?
I am. I'm going to talk about the different kinds.
I mean, the two that I'm most familiar with, and only familiar with by name, not by actually how they break down, are Chapter 7 and Chapter 11.
Yes.
Now, what that means, I don't really know. I just know that there's two different types that fall under the two different categories.
Would you care to hazard a guess as to what each one means?
Well, Chapter 11, I thought, was more like personal finances, and Chapter 7 was like business ones. But that's just a guess.
That's your guess?
Yeah.
Well, we'll find out if you're right here in a little bit.
Dun, dun, dun.
But before we go any farther, and before we find out whether you're how wrong you are.
Is that a cliffhanger?
I think there's some motions pending before the court today.
Now I can't even approach with any motions because I'm too impotent from finding out I'm wrong on these things. Might we approach the bench to pay for court costs?
You may. Who do we have on the docket today?
We have with us once again this week our good friends at BetterHelp.com.
Is there something interfering with your happiness? Or is preventing you from achieving your goals?
Like bankruptcy?
That could be something to talk about.
BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist.
You can start communicating in under 24 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online.
There is a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's counselor network, which may not be locally available in many areas.
And we said it before when we were doing our bits on this. Here in West Virginia, not a lot of counselors around. We're kind of a rural area.
Lots of rural stuff. Cows and pigs and chickens and what have you, but not too many counselors.
And what have you. What have you. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account.
Our favorite toy.
It's log. It's big. It's round. It's wood. It's log. It's better than bad.
It's good.
You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor.
You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room with outdated magazines.
I know. Why are they always so old? I don't know.
That's because they read them first, and then when their wife says, hey, take those to work and get them out of the house, and that's when they show up at the office.
BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed.
It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available.
Visit BetterHelp.com/court and join the over 500,000 people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
For court-appointed listeners, you can get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/court. Mike and Tommy say, find your peace of mind. Now, grade me, Professor.
You get a zero.
Oh, great.
Well, let's go. We'll sort through here in a little bit and see if I can give you some partial credit.
All right.
So, the procedural aspects of bankruptcy basically are governed by the Federal Rules of Bankruptcy Procedure, or the bankruptcy rules. So, bankruptcy courts have their own rules.
That makes sense.
They are federal courts, and they usually take place in the federal courthouses, but they're kind of their own little subset specialty. And actually, attorneys that do a lot of bankruptcy work, that's what they do.
I see that advertised. People put that under there.
There are some general practitioners that handle bankruptcies, and they do other kinds of stuff, but I think usually in your larger metropolitan areas, if you do bankruptcy work, you do bankruptcy work.
You stay busy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. One way or the other, either a creditor or a debtor, you stay busy. So there's forms that basically you use for the bankruptcy courts, and basically the legal procedures with the way things happen is very set and very rigid, the process of it. Now, I have actually never done a bankruptcy proceeding before because I'm not a bankruptcy lawyer. I've never done it before. No. I'm somewhat familiar with the process of it just from being a lawyer and being a lawyer for as long as I have now at this point. But I've never done it before. I think if in a pinch, if somebody put a gun to my head and said, Michael Meadows, you need to be a bankruptcy lawyer, file this bankruptcy, I think
you'd muddle your way through.
I could probably do it.
As a guy that has lots of debts, I'm fairly familiar with it because I think about it all the time. Oh my God, I'm going to have to declare bankruptcy.
There's a bankruptcy court for each judicial district in the country. Each state has at least one or more districts, and there are 90 bankruptcy districts across the country. So they stay pretty busy.
90?
Yeah.
That's almost two per state.
They have their own clerk's office, too, so you don't file it in the regular clerk's office. There's like a bankruptcy clerk.
Hmm.
So
they sound like they know there's going to be a lot of business.
Yeah. And, brother, business is a booming. So
business is good.
The judge is a bankruptcy judge, as you might expect.
And he's bankrupt of all moral turpitude.
And the judge decides basically any kind of issue that is connected with the bankruptcy case, whether or not the debtor has the eligibility to file or whether or not they get an actual discharge of their debts or not. And generally, it's pretty much an administrative type process, and you really aren't in court that much doing things. There's usually a couple hearings, but for the most part, it's just filing forms and things like that.
So you don't ever actually appear in court?
You actually don't have to, and sometimes. The other thing is, too, is that the judge will appoint someone called a trustee, and they're appointed to kind of oversee the case. So they're almost kind of like a, for lack of a better term, a magistrate judge in this kind of sense. Mm-hmm. And usually the trustee is a lawyer who makes sure that everything is on the up and up. They review the list of assets that the debtor supplies and all that. They check out the debts and things like that and make sure that there's no hanky-panky going on. So
no hanky-panky with the assets.
The debtor's involvement is usually pretty limited. They don't actually go in front of the judge. In Chapter 7, the debtor actually does not appear in court and doesn't actually see the bankruptcy judge unless there's been some sort of objection raised in the case, like they think there's some sort of fraud or something along those lines. A Chapter 13 debtor can only have to go to appear before the bankruptcy judge at a planned confirmation hearing. And I'll get into why the 13 is a little bit different here in a little bit.
And what's a confirmation hearing? Is that confirming what his ruling is or something?
Well, Chapter 13 is going to be kind of like a reorganization.
Oh.
And so...
so they're confirming that everybody agrees to this plan.
Yeah, there's got to be some sort of plan. So I'll talk about that when I get into each kind of different kind.
All right.
Usually the only formal proceeding which a debtor has to appear is the meeting of the creditors. And that is basically once it's filed, there's a meeting, what's called a meeting of the creditors, where all the creditors get together at the... courthouse, and they, or could be, I guess, at the office of the trustee, and they get together and kind of get a chance to question the debtor to make sure they're not kind of hiding anything. So it's kind of a
does that actually happen?
Yeah, it's kind of a discovery type conference almost to a certain degree.
I can understand that, like in the old days, because the people you owed were probably people right there in town.
Yeah,
but like now, like you got an American Express card and you include that on there. What is somebody going to fly in from corporate headquarters of American Express to discuss your debts?
No, I mean they'll hire a firm that does bankruptcy defense.
Really?
Yeah, represents debtors or creditors.
Wow.
So. The meeting of creditors meeting can sometimes be called a 341 meeting because Section 341 of the Bankruptcy Code requires this meeting to take place and requires the debtor to be there. So if you hear it called a 341 meeting, that's what that is.
Mm-hmm.
As we said, the fundamental goal of bankruptcy is to give the debtor a fresh start. And this was kind of made clear even before the current law was enacted back in 1934 in a case called Local Loan v. Hunt. And the court basically says, I kind of like this quote. I always like to pull quotes whenever I can. It gives the honest but unfortunate debtor a new opportunity in life and a clear field for future effort, unhampered by the pressure of discouragement of pre-existing debt. Well, doesn't that sound very altruistic?
It does. And it also, wasn't that right after the Depression?
It was,
and the stock market crash and everything? I wonder if that was something like that, because you had all those people that committed suicide and they were financially ruined for life and everything?
Yeah.
I wonder if that came about because of that. They wanted to avoid those kind of personal financial disasters in the future.
Yeah, I mean, it possibly could. I mean, that could have definitely talked about or helped influence the kind of view on what bankruptcy is and about how we should view debt, possibly.
I mean, I remember standing on the street corner selling apples for a penny during that time. It was hard times. It was hard for a feller to get by. Raising a family... 33 was a rough year for us.
Now, the final thing that happens whenever you have a bankruptcy hearing is there's a bankruptcy discharge. And what that does is that releases the debtor from the personal liability from certain debts and things like that.
I'm just thinking about you going to the doctor. Why are you here? I have a bankruptcy discharge.
Oh, that's good.
It is.
Congratulations. And, the discharge, we'll talk about the timing of the discharge, the objections to the discharge, and the revocation.
The location of the discharge.
It also talks about how that if a creditor tries to come back and collect a debt on a creditor, what their recourse is.
You're allowed to punch them?
Yeah, you're allowed to punch them. It's a very strange rule.
It's called the one-hit rule. You're only allowed one punch. If you miss, that's it.
Yeah, it's a 6-inch rule. Draw back 6 inches and punch them. That's it.
They have to stand there and take it.
Yep. So now there are...
I can't get your money, but I do get to punch you. Now stand still, you bloke.
There are some basic kinds of bankruptcy cases, and each one is given basically the name of the chapter that describes it. So when you hear about a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, that's because it's contained in Chapter 7 of the Bankruptcy Code.
How many chapters are there?
I don't know.
Oh.
I've never actually read the bankruptcy.
You never read the whole book?
I've never read the book. I only skipped to the good parts.
You just read the cliff notes?
Yeah, I read the cliff notes. So Chapter 7, which is one of the ones you named, and that is called liquidation. And basically what that is a kind of court-supervised procedure by which the trustee takes over the assets of the debtor's estates and reduces them to cash and makes distributions to the creditors, subject to the debtor's right to retain certain and exempt property and the rights of the secured creditors. Basically, there's not much exempt property in Chapter 7 cases, so there actually might not be any kind of liquidation of the debtor's assets. These cases are sometimes called like no-asset cases, and basically a creditor who has an unsecured claim will get a distribution from the bankruptcy estate only if the case is an asset case, and they file proof of their claim. So basically, in most of your Chapter 7 cases, the debtor is just a simple individual. They have...
I'm a simple individual.
They have a lot of unsecured debt, like credit card debt and stuff like that. And they usually receive a discharge in just a few months because there's not really that much to sort through. So
But now, what can you exempt? Can't you exempt certain things like like your house or cars, or do they force you to sell those things?
No, you can exempt certain things, or you can reaffirm that debt too.
Which I mean, say, look, I'm going to keep paying for my house and my cars, but I can't pay any of these other things.
Yeah, you can do that. I mean, they don't want to take everything, and there's certain exemptions you can get, your house usually being one of them, as long as you reaffirm that debt. Now, the Chapter 7, though, that's basically where there's not any assets, so you're not really claiming that you have any assets.
Oh, okay.
And
so you're living in an apartment on credit card debt, and you have no job, and you just say, I give up.
That's it. I guess so.
I own nothing. I walk to work.
Now, the amendments we talked about in 2005, basically...
I have a three-legged dog. You can have it if you want it. That's my only asset.
Yeah, I don't even have a leg to give you of my dog. He's only got three left.
His name's Tripod.
The amendments in 2005 require a means test to determine whether the individual consumer can qualify for relief under Chapter 7. And basically, if the debtor's income is in excess of a certain amounts, then they might not even be able to get Chapter 7. So they really limited Chapter 7 as far as a complete discharge of debts like that. It's harder to do now.
Yeah, that was one of the things they did not too long ago. They changed the bankruptcy laws and made it harder to do a bankruptcy.
Yeah, it was 2005 when they did this amendment. Mm-hmm. Now, Chapter 9, which until I started researching this, I'd never heard of because I'm not a bankruptcy attorney. Mm-hmm. It is called Adjustment of Debts of a Municipality. And basically, what that does is it's kind of like a reorganization, but only municipalities may file it under Chapter 9.
So, I've heard of cities going bankrupt.
Yeah, and so they file under Chapter 9.
Birmingham, Alabama went bankrupt.
That place has been bankrupt of morals for years.
Ever since the steel industry went down.
But, so Chapter 9 is only for municipalities, which means, like, you know, towns, cities. But it could also mean any kind of governmental entity, really, I guess, like a school district or things like that. So, And that's going to be a reorganization of debt, not like really a discharge. So they come together with some sort of plan to try to figure out how to get all this debt paid off.
Okay.
Now, Chapter 11.
Chapter 11. I haven't read that far.
Spoiler alert. It's called Reorganization.
All right.
And it's usually used by commercial enterprises that really want to continue operating their business, and they want to repay their creditors while they're basically still operating. So you always hear about this, that like larger companies or corporations, they're filing...
Right, they file bankruptcy, but they're still going to be operating.
Yeah. There was one in particular I know, I think in Florida, the Winn-Dixie one.
Mm-hmm.
Which Winn-Dixie is a large grocery...
Supermarket
change, grocery store. And they were going through Chapter 11 bankruptcy for years and years and years and years.
There
were some attorneys. There are some attorneys that worked on that pretty much the bulk of their careers on one bankruptcy case.
They couldn't keep up with Piggly Wiggly. They were beating them out.
Who can keep up with Piggly Wiggly?
They were leading them by a snout.
The Chapter 11 debtor has the right to file a plan of reorganization within the first 120 days after they file the case, and they have to provide creditors with a disclosure statement containing information adequate to enable creditors to evaluate the plan. So basically, they kind of come up with their own plan saying, hey, here's what we're going to do. This is our plan to square things away.
You don't discharge any debts. You just kind of reduce your payments and stretch them out or something?
Yeah, you could. And they may discharge certain debt. I guess if maybe a creditor fails to appear after getting notice, possibly you might be able to get some sort of kind of something akin to summary judgment on them so that it's discharged then. But basically, the plan has to be approved by the court. And then basically the debtor can reduce their debts by repaying only a portion of the obligation and discharging others. So basically they might say, this debt is way too high. We're never going to get out of it. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to pay you this much for this long. And if we do that, then you'll discharge whatever's left over. So that might be like kind of
A
basic
basic
structure of how that's going to work. There's usually a...
So then the other guy, he's thinking, well, look, if I say no, I'm not going to get anything.
Yeah.
So something's better than nothing.
Yeah. And, you know, there might be some sort of contract or lease or something that is just really, really just killing them. And they might be able to get some sort of relief from that.
There's sometimes, I think, I don't know which type it is, but that different businesses will get it, and they have the ability to come out from under union control or something because they say the union is the cause of them not being able to make money.
Yeah, I mean, that could be a reason. You could be seeking that from the court, and then you know, the union has to determine, well, is it better for us to
save the jobs,
save
or,
the jobs or
stay here
this.
And then let them go under.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So usually there's a period where the business kind of goes through some sort of almost kind of like a debt consolidation type plan, and they end up with some sort of reduced debt load and a business, hopefully, that's profitable. Now, there's sometimes they go through these and they don't pan out so well. I think Sears recently went through Chapter 11. They tried to reorganize and do some things. And
they're still in bad shape.
Yeah, it just didn't help. So, but there are some businesses that can come through it. Mm-hmm. I know there have been some success stories. I just can't think of them off the top of my head. But
well, that's because they're a success, so nobody remembers the businesses.
That's right. Nobody remembers the bad stuff, only the good stuff.
No, they remember the bad stuff. They don't remember the good stuff.
Right, what I said.
Oh, okay.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Take that around, flip it.
All right.
So the next one I've actually never heard of either. It's kind of an obscure one. Chapter 12.
Well, it's right between 11 and 13.
That's right. And it's called Adjustment of Debts of a Family Farmer or Fisherman with Regular Annual Income. So...
Is that specific to farmers and fishermen? They throw them in together because they both start with an F?
I guess. I do not know. And I never actually had heard of this until I did this. So.
Farmers, fishermen, and fools.
Yeah. I only wanted to talk about it because I just really like the name. Adjustment of Debts of a Family Farmer or Fisherman with Regular Annual Income.
Well, that's very specific.
Yeah. Now, Chapter 13. This is one of the ones you said you had heard of before, too, right?
Right.
And Chapter 13 is called Adjustment of Debts of an Individual with Regular Income. And that's basically where you have somebody who's got a good job. And this is basically where most of your bankruptcies are pushed to these days, because Chapter 7 is much harder to qualify for.
Mm-hmm.
So Chapter 13 is where most of your bankruptcies happen now.
Okay.
And the person has a regular job, and it allows basically the debtor to keep their assets, like their house, like you had said. And they get some sort of plan together, kind of similar to Chapter 11, where over time, they get to basically start to repay their debt. Usually it's a 3 to 5 year plan. At the confirmation hearing for the plan, the court either approves or disapproves the debtor's repayment plan, depending on whether or not it meets the bankruptcy code's requirements for confirmation. So Chapter 13 is very different from Chapter 7, because Chapter 13, the debtor usually remains in possession of the property of the estate and makes payments to the creditors. Chapter 7, the debtor does not receive immediate... So, Chapter 7, the debtor receives an immediate discharge of debts. Chapter 13, they don't receive an immediate discharge of debts. They have this plan where they have to put together to try to work on it. And if the debtor completes the payments required under the plan, then they receive the discharge of whatever the option is under the plan.
It's not until after whatever that time period
exactly.
is.
Exactly. And the debtor is basically protected from lawsuits, garnishments, and other creditor actions while the plan is in effect. So it's actually a good way to kind of protect yourself, too.
But isn't there a way that, like, on a credit card or something, you can just say, look, I don't have the money, I can't pay it?
What do you mean?
I mean, do you have to pay them something? Or can you just say, I can't pay it? I ran up 5 credit cards to $20,000, and I can't pay the $100,000, and... You know, I'm going to be paying the minimum payment is $300 a month for the rest of my life.
Right.
And it's not going to make the balance go down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's where you would come in and probably get some sort of Chapter 13 relief. You would try to figure out how you're going to do that. I mean, you
can't just walk away from the debt completely is what I'm trying to get at.
Not anymore. Not unless you don't have a job, you don't have any source of income, things like that. Now, prior to 2005, you probably stood a better chance of doing that.
Okay.
But they've changed it since then. So generally, even if you file under a Chapter 7, a lot of times in this day and age, it gets converted to a Chapter 13. It's just kind of the way it happens, is my understanding.
So that's what they're saying then, is that you got to come up with some kind of plan to reorganize it to pay it.
Now, it's always, I mean, it's going to be, you're going to get better relief that way. I mean, you're better off going ahead and doing a Chapter 13 than not even filing at all, because otherwise, I mean, you're never going to pay it off.
Right.
So. Now, Chapter 15 is the last one. Again, I'd never heard of it before. Is the ancillary or other border case. And basically, that is whenever there's cross-border insolvency. And basically, if there's foreign countries involved. So that's kind of the when that happens. And I've never dealt with that either. So
that sounds very international.
Yeah.
You probably have to have a Learjet to fall under that.
I think so. Maybe so.
Now, the one thing I find interesting is that the bankruptcies are federal. And that all the laws are based on what the federal government says. And if you declare bankruptcy, it has no effect on government loans, which are also federal.
Yeah.
So that seems kind of false that they would let other, you know, don't care if it's a state loan, they don't care if it's whatever, a commercial loan. We'll give you relief on those, but when it comes to a student loan, nope, no relief, because that's us.
That's right.
They're looking out for themselves.
Yeah, that used to be able to discharge student loans at some point, but then they changed that, so you can't anymore.
Well, I saw where there's some senator that recently introduced a bill to try to make student loan relief under bankruptcy, put it back under bankruptcy again. But, I mean, they're saying that the number of dollars that are involved in it are just unbelievable, and that there's people that graduating from college now, and they'll never get out from under it.
Yeah, it's a bad situation.
And it's getting worse.
I think that basically there's been too much lobbying on behalf of student loan companies and things like that for anything to ever change. I don't see it happening.
Well, that's big business.
Oh, it is.
That's big. They were in cahoots with the colleges.
Yeah.
They were pushing the colleges to do that, to get the people in there. And don't worry, we'll give them the money. And so the colleges got their money, and then the federal government secured the loans on all these people offering the money, so they had nothing to lose.
Yeah.
The more they gave away, the better.
It was a total scam.
Yeah. And there's several generations that are going to pay for it.
So there's different kind of terms that are used a lot in bankruptcy, and there's things like automatic stay. Automatic stay is basically if you do file bankruptcy, all their proceedings relating to any of those debts and whatnot, there's an order which stays any other proceeding.
So if somebody's getting a judgment against you or something like that, that stays it. You don't finish it till your bankruptcy thing's done.
Right. One of the things that happened a lot in Florida back in like 2007, 2008 when the housing market burst is that a lot of attorneys were doing bankruptcy work and foreclosure defense. And what they would do, somebody would file a foreclosure on the person's home because it was underwater and they couldn't make the payments on it.
Right.
They would go ahead and go file for bankruptcy, and what that would do is that would stall the foreclosure proceeding because they were actually a creditor of the person. So until the bankruptcy took place, the foreclosure couldn't go forward. So you had all these foreclosure proceedings that were proceeding all the way up to like almost the final judgment. Then at the 11th hour, they're going in filing bankruptcy. They file bankruptcy. Whoa, pump the brakes. You can't
take their house.
Can't do anything else.
Yeah.
So the person could live in it a little while longer. And so part of the game plan for some of these people was basically just to try to live in their house free as long as they could to try to save up money.
And to get another house.
To get another house. Yeah. I mean, it was like, you know, it was kind of a very hardball way to do it, but they weren't really left with many options down there. So I don't think West Virginia was really hit with the housing bubble the way that many other places were. I think maybe in the panhandle they were a little bit.
Well, you have to look at the median house price in West Virginia is like $35,000 or something like that. So it's hard to get upside down from $35,000. There's not far to fall.
Yeah.
You know, the lot's worth something.
Yeah. Dirt's worth something. But you don't own the stuff underneath it because you already signed your mineral rights away. So.
Yeah. I mean, there's basically in town, there's no lots left in Huntington.
Well, we're getting more empty lots because we're knocking buildings down that need to be knocked down.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of places for sale that are worth more if you tore the house down, I think. The house sitting on it is a detriment to even being able to sell the property.
There's a Facebook page called Rapid River Realty, and it's this guy. He goes around to different places in West Virginia, and I guess he buys these horrible properties, and he tries to flip them. And his tagline is "for sale cheap." That's what he always says, and he has that accent. But it's pretty funny. I always try to watch a couple of his videos every week because he's all over the state and he's just seeing all these blighted properties and he's like, "Oh, this is a good one." I don't know about how he's making money with his business model, but he sure is entertaining. So, if you're thinking about filing bankruptcy. And I've advised clients about whether or not...
Who told you?
I've advised clients about whether or not I think they should file bankruptcy or not. And I always say, look, I'm not a bankruptcy attorney. I can't really advise you on that. But if you meet certain qualifications, I think you should probably go talk to one. And usually, my threshold was always about $10,000 to $15,000 of debt that you don't think you're going to be able to repay. It might be worth going to talk and... to a bankruptcy lawyer to see if it's worthwhile.
I always thought it was like a ratio of your assets to your debts. if your debts were like, you know, three times your assets, you're probably better off for something to do that.
Well, you can look at it that way too. Probably the 10 to 15 number is more for people who don't have as high an income or things like that.
Or don't have any many assets or whatever. Yeah,
but I mean, if obviously if you make $100,000 a year and you have $10,000 to $15,000 in debt, it's probably not worth it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can probably come figure out some way to pay that off.
Mm-hmm.
The other things to think about are some of the ramifications of it. If you do file for bankruptcy, then basically there's a bit of a stigma attached to bankruptcy.
It used to be. I don't think it's there anymore.
Well, I think some people still hold on to that.
That's just like divorce.
That's true.
You know, when I was a kid, somebody got divorced in the neighborhood. Everybody's like, oh, can you believe it? They got divorced. Now, heck, people get divorced all the time.
They do.
There's no stigma. Same way with bankruptcy. It used to be. That was terrible. A man does not declare bankruptcy. He takes care of his debts. Now, hey, look, some people do it several times, and it's a good financial rebirth, just like it said there.
It is limited. You can only do it every 8 years, so you can't do it year after year after year. The interesting thing you see is a lot of these debt consolidation companies. Have you ever seen the commercials for those?
Yeah, I don't trust them. I always think they're scams.
Well, that's because they usually are.
Oh, well, that's...
And what they do is they want you to basically sign a contract with them.
Mm-hmm.
They'll tell you to stop paying all of your debts.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do instead is you send them the payments, and they'll hold on to your money for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get a certain amount, they'll negotiate with that credit card company and pay off your debt.
Mm-hmm.
Usually for a lesser...
It probably ruins your credit along the way, though.
It does. And they say, avoid bankruptcy. Use debt consolidation.
So you avoid bankruptcy, but you ruined your credit.
Right. You'd be better off actually filing bankruptcy, which is always frustrating when you see these commercials, because it's, you know, it's not...
Well, except for 7 years or whatever, that stays on your record, and it really brings down your credit score, and you'll get flooded with offers for high interest or high risk credit cards or whatever.
Yeah.
Because that's all you can get.
Now, your credit score is going to be hurt if you do file for bankruptcy. Basically, credit scores are really weird.
Credit karma will kick your ass.
You never know exactly what affects a credit score.
Mm-hmm.
I got one of those. Somebody stole one of my... I didn't steal my debit card. I don't know how they did it. But they ran up my debit card at a McDonald's for like $50. Somewhere, and I was like, how do you spend $50 at McDonald's? That's amazing.
Yeah.
And then they charged a bunch of money.
Look for a 400-pounder.
Yeah, they charged a bunch of money different places. And this was someplace where I hadn't been in years and years and years. So all I can think is they must have swiped it off the internet or at a gas station or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, I decided I wanted to get one of those credit monitoring services for a little bit to make sure nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really odd to me the things that affected your credit score.
Like checking your credit score used to affect your credit score.
Well, yeah. But I mean, this, and the companies themselves allow you to check it kind of constantly, I guess. I don't know how that's legal when, you know, I don't get in my tirade about credit score companies. But anyway, things like paying your debt down actually made your score lower, makes your score get worse. Sometimes buying things and making it go up actually increased your score. It's just really odd, as I used it and noticed it, some of the things that made it go up or down. Mm-hmm. I don't really understand why it works that way.
It's all a racket, just like oil prices.
Yeah, pretty much. But if you have a high credit score and you file bankruptcy, your score is going to fall probably more. And if
you have a low credit score, it doesn't matter. It
doesn't matter as much.
You're screwed anyway.
And basically, the Chapter 7 bankruptcy will be on your credit report for 10 years. And Chapter 13 usually for 7 years. Hmm. So it's longer for the Chapter 7, but you're getting a better deal from it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe it's worth it.
Yeah. If you're going to go big.
The other thing is that basically, if you have a loan and people co-signed on it, it could affect them as well.
Mm-hmm.
In a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, the co-signer is on the hook. So basically, the creditors can go after them for payments. And Chapter 13 is kind of a little bit different. The stay that prevents creditors from pursuing payments against the debtor actually extends to the co-signers as well. So as long as the debtor is making their payments,
can't go
after the co-signer as well. So that's something to think about if you're thinking about filing bankruptcy. There are some different kinds of effects for it. But I think that if you're in a financial situation, you don't really see a way out of it, it's not a bad option.
Mm-hmm.
So, You know, typically, I think...
Better than losing everything.
Yeah. And I think typically, you know, an attorney's fees for a bankruptcy, I think it's generally like around $1,500 is how much it's going to cost you to get a bankruptcy attorney to do it. I mean, of course, it's going to vary place from place, but based upon what I understand is to be the normal fee, I think that's about how much it costs.
So it's basically just some paper filings.
It's a lot of administrative stuff. You don't have to generally go in and get berated by your creditors, and there's no lashings.
Don't really even have to go before the judge.
No, not really.
If you file it and you don't get any exceptions, then it just goes.
Now, it is most likely going to be a Chapter 13 because Chapter 7s are pretty rare these days. But another thing, too, if you have a lot of medical bills, something to think about, too.
Yeah.
And that, which is a sad thing that you're going to file bankruptcy over medical bills in this country, but it is what it is.
Yep. So that's the way it rolls.
Now, I think you know some people who have filed bankruptcy.
Well, yes. Just the same way that we talked last week about the pamphleteers handing out about who's going to be in impotence court and all that, and everyone's so excited and it's all titillating. It's because it's famous people that have taken a fall. And we all love to see that. Well, you know, to make you feel better if you're thinking about filing bankruptcy, there's famous people that go through bankruptcy that had lots of money, and they somehow got rid of it. Now, this list is in no particular order. It's just the way they came up.
Yeah.
First on the list is 50 Cent.
50 Cent?
50 Cent. Yeah.
He only had a quarter.
Yeah, he had lost half of it. Back in May of 2015, Forbes named 50 Cent one of the five wealthiest hip-hop artists, pegging his net worth at $155 million.
Wow.
If I went bankrupt after having that much, I don't know. But bad investments and a big lawsuit, he was ordered to pay $5 million to a woman who says he posted a sex tape of her online, put the rapper's fortune in jeopardy. The man who once promised to get rich or die trying filed for Chapter 11 protection in a Connecticut court, a move that allowed him to reorganize his finances while developing a plan to repay his creditors. At the time, he estimated his debt to be between $10 million and $50 million, and his assets in roughly the same range. In July 2016, he emerged from bankruptcy with a plan to repay more than $23 million in debt over the next 5 years.
Hmm.
Now, the next one's somebody we all know and love, Donald Trump. Now, he has never personally...
What did you say?
He has never personally declared bankruptcy, but he has, as a business person, what is it, five times?
Seriously?
Six times. While Trump has never personally declared bankruptcy, his companies have gone bankrupt six times. The first was in 1991 when his Trump Taj Mahal Casino in Atlantic City went bust. Several more of his casinos and hotels went bankrupt in 1992. Two more casinos and resort bankruptcies happened in 2004 and 2009. After the last bankruptcy, Trump stepped down as chairman of Trump Entertainment Resorts. Sounds like he waited a little bit too long. And reduced his share in the business to 10%. Challenges in the casino industry were to blame for at least some of these business failures rather than business missteps by Trump himself. For what it's worth, the brash real estate mogul sees declaring Chapter 11 bankruptcy as a strategic business decision. See, there's no shame. There's no red mark of shame that's associated with it. He says, I've cut debt. By the way, this isn't me personally, it's a company. Basically, I've used the laws of this country to my advantage, just as many others on top of the business world have done. This makes me a business genius.
Right.
So, you know, it's a good way to do it, I guess.
I'm not going to comment on that.
It's just the facts. Just the facts. We don't make this stuff up. We can't write that stuff. Kim Basinger, Alec Baldwin's ex. She found herself in dire financial straits in the early 1990s after she reneged on an agreement to appear in the film Boxing Helena and was ordered to pay $8.1 million to Mainline Pictures as a result. That, in turn, led to Basinger to declare bankruptcy. Among her assets that were eventually liquidated was the town of Brazelton, Georgia.
owned a town?
Yes, which she and other investors had bought with the idea of turning it into a tourist attraction. Her share of the investment was eventually sold. The once tiny town seems to be doing okay without her, though. Its population has ballooned from just a few hundred in 1990 to close to 10,000 in 2014. So maybe she was oppressive or something. I don't know.
I had heard about that movie, Boxing Helena.
I've seen it before.
Have you?
Yeah.
Is it good?
It's weird. It's one of those weird movies.
Does it end up?
If I remember right, the guy cuts off the girl's arms and legs.
Yeah.
So she can't get away.
Right. That's what I thought it was.
That's what it's boxing Elena. That's what it's about.
Yeah, that's that.
Yeah, I mean, it was so long ago I saw it. I don't really remember all the details, but that's what happens at the end. Spoiler alert.
I thought that was the plot for it.
From 1990.
What an odd.
Spoiler alert.
What an odd movie. She had to pay $8.1 million. It may have been worth it not to have to do that movie.
I'd say so. Marvin Gaye. He was the life of Motown legend Marvin Gaye was marked by both success with numerous hit records and Grammy nominations and tragedy. His own father fatally shot him in 1984. His troubles also included the breakdown of his first marriage to Anna Gordy, the sister of Motown Records' Berry Gordy. Unpaid alimony to the tune of $600,000 led the crooner to declare bankruptcy in 1976 as part of a deal to settle his debt to his ex. He agreed to pay her all the royalties for his next record. The resulting album, Here, My Dear, featured tracks including You Can't Leave, But It's Going You Can Leave, But It's Going to Cost You. As Gaye made his feelings about the breakup and his former wife abundantly clear.
I wonder how much money the royalties were for that album.
I know. But she got it all, whatever it was.
Yeah. Usually things that are nature of support like that, alimony, child support, things like that, are not dischargeable.
Well, Willie Nelson has had to do that to pay back taxes to federal government. That's why he's still working and making records. That poor guy, they own him.
He's coming to town soon.
He's like 97, and he's still out touring and everything, trying to pay the government back so that they don't put him in jail or something.
He'll be here in town soon.
Willie?
Yeah,
with Allison. Willie
with Allison Krauss. I've seen him in concert.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And Allison Krauss, is she the same one that performed with Robert Plant?
Maybe.
Didn't they do a record together not that long ago? Well, it was probably longer ago than I'm willing to admit. But
possibly. So.
Here's one that surprised me. Mark Twain. By the 1880s, Mark Twain had made his indelible mark on American literature with the publication of The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn and was basking in the success of Ulysses S. Grant's memoirs, which his publishing company had released to great acclaim. But an ill-advised investment in a new typesetting machine and cash flow problems at his publishing house meant he enjoyed only a brief window of financial freedom. A financial panic in 1893 was a final blow, and Twain had to declare personal bankruptcy at the age of 60.
I got an email about investing in a new typesetting machine recently. I'm glad I didn't follow up on that.
Yeah, that's right. It was not digital, huh?
Typesetting, way of the future.
Joe Francis. You know who Joe Francis was?
I have no idea.
You ever heard of Girls Gone Wild?
Yeah.
He was the developer of Girls Gone Wild.
Wow.
Joe Francis made a fortune out of persuading drunk college girls to take their tops off and then selling the resulting videos on late night TV.
I find it hard to believe that a financial genius who came up with such a business model as that would ever file bankruptcy.
I know, right? I mean, he should have gone on Shark Tank with this, right? The sleazy money-making scheme worked for a while, but the Girls Gone Wild empire eventually crumbled because of its founder's financial and legal difficulties, which included a stint in prison for filming underage girls and millions of dollars owed to the IRS. Amid all of his other problems, Francis ran up a $2 million gambling debt at Steve Wynn's Las Vegas casino, which he refused to pay. Girls Gone Wild declared bankruptcy in 2013, so Wynn couldn't claim those assets to settle the bill either. But Francis's financial problems didn't stop there. In May 2015, a federal judge issued a warrant for his arrest after he failed to turn over two luxury cars to his lawyers. Francis currently lives in his luxury estate in Mexico, thus avoiding any further prosecution, and it doubles as a posh getaway spot for celebrities, including Kim Kardashian.
Kim Kardashian hangs out with the guy from Girls Gone Wild?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if there's ever a girl gone wild, it's Kim Kardashian, isn't it?
I guess so. I don't really...
She put out her own sex tape.
That's true, she did. This might shock you a little bit. I don't follow pop culture too much.
You don't?
No.
Man, you gotta watch more TV. TV will keep you educated.
Books will rot your brain.
That's right. TV keeps you up to date. Gary Coleman, the Different Strokes star.
Yeah, I knew this.
He declared bankruptcy, and then he had bad health problems and fell down steps and died.
Yeah.
So he died in 2010. Abby Lee Miller, you know who she is?
Drawing a blank.
Dance Moms. She's a dance teacher on Dance Moms, the one that everybody loves to hate. And she got prosecuted for money laundering and tax evasion and all kinds of stuff. And she went to prison for a year and a half or something like that. And then as she was finishing up her year in prison, they found she had cancer. So, I mean, she has really suffered in a downfall from what started out as simple embezzlement or something like that.
Yeah.
But so she had to declare bankruptcy to keep them from taking everything she had. It said in Miller's case, her fame only made her crimes more noticeable. A bankruptcy judge handling her bankruptcy proceeding spotted her on TV and realized she probably wasn't as broke as she claimed to be.
Oof.
So you can't be doing TV shows and saying you have no money coming in.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's paying you to be there. You wouldn't be there. Toni Braxton.
Oh, yeah.
Heard of her?
Yeah, the singer.
Uh-huh. She rose to fame in the 1990s, but millions of dollars in album sales didn't translate into fantastic wealth. In an interview with 2020 and 2012, that's a lot of 20s, she said she received less than $2,000 in royalty from her first recording contract and was perpetually in debt to her recording company.
Somebody took advantage of her.
Yeah, she signed a bad deal, apparently, and they'd release a record, and she owed the record company money from her record. She never made any.
She should have unchained her purse.
Yeah, well, I said eventually she came out from under it and released the album Unbreak My Heart as a comeback, but health problems forced her to cancel her Las Vegas review, and she ended up bankrupt again. And the last one is the guy that you always looked up to, the teen heartthrob that you wanted to emulate all your life. David Cassidy.
David Cassidy?
Yeah.
How old do you think I am?
Oh, maybe that was me. Former teen idol David Cassidy has fallen on hard times. People reported he's had problems with alcohol and was charged with DUIs three times between 2010 and 2014. 2014, his wife filed for divorce. By 2015, the Partridge Family star was broke. In a bankruptcy filing, he claimed to owe $10 million. Among his creditors are a lawyer, several banks, and American Express. But he tried to go back to performing, but his health wouldn't allow it. So he announced his retirement in February of 2017 and then died in November of 2017. So it's a sad end to a once very sought-after teen star.
Poor David Cassidy.
That's it. He's riding in the back of the bus.
The Partridge bus?
Yes. That was the bus I was referring to.
See, I knew that.
You knew that?
Yeah.
But you didn't know he was your hero?
I did not know he was my hero.
Oh, well, he is now.
No, he's not. That's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is a part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal questions. These are going to deal with bankruptcy, believe it or not.
Oh, well, we haven't talked about that, have we?
You might be in for a long one.
I don't know.
So, where does the bankruptcy code get its authority?
From the Constitution.
That's right. Do you remember where?
Article 1, Chapter 3.
Such authority. It's Article 1, Section 8.
Well, I was close. I needed a Section 8. I need a Section 8 discharge. I'm just like Klinger.
Yeah, you are a Section 8. The bankruptcy laws in the Constitution, it says Congress can establish uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcies throughout the United States. But back then, as we said, that bankruptcy kind of had a different meaning. It really was not for the creditors. It was more for the debtors
to get something, to squeeze every last blood out of that turnip.
That's right. So, what is Chapter 7 bankruptcy?
Chapter 7 is basically when you have unsecured debt and you don't really have any assets, and so you go in and you try to get a total discharge.
That's right. And how hard is it to get a total discharge?
Well, it depends on where the infection is. It's very hard now. You have to be without a job or any creditable assets.
That's right. So what would happen if you filed a Chapter 7, but they found out you had assets and a job and had the ability to pay? What would happen?
They'd force you to file it under Chapter 13.
They would convert it, actually, to a Chapter 13.
Okay, so, that too.
Yeah, and so what is a Chapter 13?
Chapter 13 is a reorganization of your bankruptcy debts to where you have to formulate a plan to how you're going to pay it, and you may not pay it all off, but you have to pay it a certain amount at a time and within a certain time frame. And if you do that, as everybody agrees to it, then they discharge your debt at the end of that time.
But Tommy, I have a house. I want to keep it. Can I still file bankruptcy under Chapter 13?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Come see me. I handle bankruptcies. I am now educated on them. I'm going to be a bankruptcy lawyer. Since you're not, somebody's got to fill the hole.
That's right. What is an automatic stay?
An automatic stay is like if somebody's seeking a judgment against you or a foreclosure on you and you file bankruptcy, you get an automatic stay, which means all other legal proceedings against you stop.
That's right.
Financial legal proceedings. I was listening intently here.
You were. I'm thinking maybe you are going to file bankruptcy.
Armed with the knowledge I have gained, I'm going forth and make myself rich by declaring bankruptcy.
I hereby claim bankruptcy.
And then I'm going to get a top hat and a monocle and a cane and be like the guy on Monopoly.
Well, that's going to do it for Legal Briefs. I'm actually giving you 110% on this.
110? One. I got like extra credit just because I answered so authoritatively?
Yeah. Yeah.
I've always heard if you say so, even if it's wrong, if you say it with authority, some people will believe you.
Yeah. You're like, Article 1, Chapter 3. No, Section 8.
It's like James Bond said, you know, just act like you belong there. And people won't question. That's how you slip into those cocktail parties and find the Russian spy lady and stuff like that.
Fake it till you make it.
That's right.
Which is also the theme of Impotence Court.
That's right. Fake it till you make it. That's what she said.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Bim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out, though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.